Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Nancy Kichuk, Associate Director, Strategic Human Resource Policy at OPM. Also joining us in our conversation is Ed Vitalis, Associate Partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. Nancy, your organization is responsible for the Federal Human Capital Survey. Could you tell us a little bit about how you use this survey and discuss other ways you collect information to help you improve the management of human capital?
Yes. We surveyed in 2006 over 400,000 people. So we get a lot of information from the Federal Human Capital Survey. And we look at the results from it in four ways. We look at what it tells us about leadership, what it tells us about results-oriented performance, what it tells us about how we're managing our federal workforce, and we find out how much employees are satisfied with certain aspects of their job. We take that information and we give it to agencies because agencies are the real site of transformation of human capital. And the agencies take those results and look at where they've done well and where they haven't done so well. We show them the comparison of their results to the government-wide average. We show them the things that they did best in and the things they did the worst in. And we show them where they've improved the most and where they've declined the most. So they get a wealth of information in these areas, and then they develop an action plan and go out and work with their employees to try to improve areas that they've identified that need improvement. We're concerned at OPM about over-surveying, but it's always good to have information. So we do surveys on benefits alone to find out how employees like their benefits. We're doing surveys on child care subsidies to see if those are meeting the need that they were designed to meet. We do telework surveys to see if folks like their telework benefits and if they're using their telework benefits. So those are the kinds of things we ask questions of the employees about.
Now, the Senior Executive Service Performance-Based Pay System, which has been in effect since 2004, I believe falls under your purview. Right. How does the SCS certification process work, and can you discuss the connection between this effort and other pay-for-performance initiatives going on in the federal sector?
I'm going to start with the connection for this pay-for-performance efforts and other efforts. This one is just something that's leading the way. It applies to all SESers. As you know, senior executive service folks are the leaders in the federal government, and it's good to start with your leaders because if it's good for them, then it's good for the employees. We at OPM set criteria that agencies must meet for their senior executive corps in order to be certified. They submit to us what their SES plan looks like and show us how they've met the criteria. Part of the criteria is that their performance plans for their senior execs must be aligned with the mission of the agency. You want your folks to be doing work that in some way supports what you're trying to accomplish. So we look at the performance standards, see if they've met the criteria, and if they have, we certify the system. If the system is certified, then the agency has authorization to pay senior executives in that agency above executive level 3. So senior executive service pay is capped at $154,600 if you're in a non-certified system and $168,000 if you're in a certified system. So you can see the incentive to get certified is very high, and almost all agencies are applying for certification. There are some agencies that only have maybe one or two execs, and it's not worth their while to do so. We're hoping that this system will demonstrate that pay for performance is a good idea. We believe in pay for performance, and we've worked on legislative proposals in the past to get pay for performance government-wide, but frankly, right now the Congress doesn't have much of an appetite for that. We do have the NSPS, National Security Personnel System, that DOD has, and they had legislation that allows them to do pay for performance, And they're implementing that, and it is also a very successful program. It's in phase two of implementation. Not everybody who's eligible has yet been converted. The system has had some court challenges, so it's not available to everyone. Right now, if you're covered by a bargaining unit, you're not going to be covered yet under the NSPS system. So pay for performance is something that we think is a good idea. We think the SES system will demonstrate that, and we'd like to get more history with that that shows its success. And there are other systems in the government that are doing pay for performance, but it's certainly not universal at this point.
Nancy, another new program at OPM is the Career Patterns Recruiting Strategy. Could you elaborate on Career Patterns in terms of how it differs from traditional recruiting, as well as how things like Career Pattern Scenarios play into that framework?
Career Patterns is one of our efforts to deal with the impending retirement wave of federal employees. We feel that we have to be more strategic in recruiting and retaining people for federal jobs because just by the demographics of our population, we're poised to lose some very, very good people, and there's always strong competition for good folks. So Career Patterns is a way to identify different forms of employment, different things that will appeal to folks, and to make the agencies, again, the folks that are on the ground recruiting, aware of some of the ways they can structure jobs so they can appeal to a certain segment of the population. For example, in Career Patterns, we are asking the agencies, do you want to hire a student? Is this a job appropriate for a person just starting out, or a new professional, or mid-career, somebody at the end? Think about that. That way that you can target your recruitment to the folks that will best fit that job. We're also asking them to identify whether it's a job with high mobility or low mobility. And we're asking them to look at some of the flexibilities you have in the workplace. What about telework, work from home? What about part-time employment? What about alternative work schedules? And if those are available, then use them as a recruiting tool and help you get the right person in to do the right jobs. That's the initiative we call Career Patterns. And we think it's appealing to a new workforce. We want to appeal to everybody. We want to appeal to the folks that are willing to do a 9-to-5 job, folks that want to move, folks that want to stay in place, folks that want to work in the office, and folks that want to work at home. And so we're just trying to make sure that all the flexibilities are on the table when we do our recruiting.
Very interesting. I recently heard a term called career sculpting in the private sector, and it sounds very similar. One of the other major challenges that is facing all employers is rising health care costs. OPM has announced that premium rates for the 2007 federal health benefits program, and the premium includes only a 1.8% rate hike, and that's the lowest since 1997. Can you give us some insight as to how this apparently low premium average increase was accomplished?
Okay. Now, first of all, I am an actuary, so this is definitely my field. So you have to be careful that I don't get wound up and go on this topic for hours and hours. But we're profiting from some very, very good experience in the drug area. I think that, frankly, the new Medicare drug program is doing a lot to educate people on the use of generics. We're finding more generics, more drug substitutions. So the trends that we estimated at the time that we set the 2006 rates didn't turn out to be real. In other words, we overestimated the amount of money that was needed in 2006. So when we did our negotiations this past summer, we knew that we had reserves we could use to defray rate increases, and we used those reserves. This 1.8% increase follows a couple years of much lower than average trends in the past. And I think the worst of the drug costs are behind us. That's been driving our costs for a very long time.
There's also been much talk about introducing consumer-driven health plans as a choice to the employees. Can you tell us about these plans and give us a status on offering these plans to federal employees?
Yes. We have two types of consumer-driven health plans in the FEHB, the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. One kind is called the high deductible health plan, where a health savings account is set up for you. That becomes your health savings account. If you don't use it for health care, it rolls over from year to year. Those plans are accompanied with a high deductible. High deductibles generally run around $800. The idea is that you have $800 you have to pay out of pocket, and you have an account that is yours. And you have to decide whether you're going to spend that money in your account for health care or whether you're going to forgo certain services. Now, we don't want people not, in order to save money, skipping things they need. So the deductible doesn't apply to certain well care physicals and things like that. But before you take elective services, you have to decide if you're going to spend that money in your account. The other kind of account has a health reimbursement account. And the only difference with those accounts are that although the account is set up on your behalf, if you ever disenroll, the money goes back to the program, not to you. The reason we have those is that they're a little cheaper since you don't get actual cash that you can carry with you the rest of your life if you don't use it. And because certain people that have Medicare coverage, etc., cannot have health savings accounts, but they can be in plans that have health reimbursement accounts. These plans are slow getting started, and we have over 4 million enrollees in the FEHB. Only about 25,000 of them are in these consumer-driven plans, but everything new starts out slow. So we have more plans every year since we started the program, and we think they're going to grow.
Interesting, interesting. Now, you've also implemented a new dental and vision insurance program for 2007. Can you describe how these programs work?
Yes, we're really proud of our dental vision. It became effective, required by the law, on December 31st of 2006. And the first enrollments for the first open season are over 700,000. So it shows that employees and retirees really wanted dental vision. The thing that makes it different than the regular FEHB is that the government does not make a contribution. This is 100% employee money paying the premiums. However, employees have the advantage that it is the premiums are paid pre-tax, so there is a tax advantage to them. Our retirees do not have that same right under the tax code. We selected through a competitive process 7 dental plans and 3 vision plans. Most of the dental plans are government-wide. We do have 2 of them that are local plans, HMOs, GHI in New York, and Comp Benefits that is in the Middle Atlantic region down through Florida. But otherwise, the plans that participate are nationwide. We ask, and the plans agree because it was a requirement, that there be no waiting periods. And the reason there are no waiting periods for services is we thought that would lock people in. The hallmark of the benefit plans, the FEHB plans that we run, and now these dental vision plans, are that every year there's an open season and people have choice. So there's no waiting so that you can move freely except for orthodontia. And that was so expensive that we wanted, you know, the industry standard is that people stay in the area. The premium structure is a little different than for the FEHB. In the FEHB, we have a self-enrollment and a family enrollment. In dental vision, we have a self plus one, and a family. But it's been real popular. It's been more popular than we ever expected. And we're going to start to pay benefits and see how that goes.
That's fantastic. That is very fantastic. How is the federal government managing an aging workforce? we will ask Nancy Kichuk, Associate Director, Strategic Human Resource Policy at the Office of Personnel Management, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.